So hello to the listening audience, who this show is for. I was going to do this show on last week, but it rained. And the thing is, it's terrible because any other time, I mean, I'm a Minnesota producer, like weather, you just wait to the last minute. And if it's bad, you just bring people inside, you know, but there's a fucking pandemic going on, so I can't just bring people inside, you know? So I had to cancel the show, even though there wasn't 100% chance of rain, which I don't like to do. Then it kind of sprinkled and lightened at the same time, you know, which is like pretty typical Minnesota. So anyways, and I have been talking about podcasting itself at the beginning of the show, but I feel like after this much time alone in your apartment, if you don't know how to podcast by now, you're like never gonna know, you know? So I thought I'd do a State of the Union, right? Because that's like the time that we're dealing with right now, that there is, we're in a constantly shifting floor, you know, like every day is different, you know, it's hard. I think it's hard to do the Dave Good Show under these circumstances. One, because I'm like outside and not like inside packed behind a tight little desk to help me feel safe. But like also that I'm trying to tell stories for the moment in time that we're in. And usually like we're like, you know, the previous moment is more similar to the next moment than it is right now. But that's not the case. So the State of the Union is we're all fucked and everyone's going to die, you know? We're all going to die, you know, which is always true that we're all going to die. But like now we're kind of all going to die a little bit extra, you know? And that is intense, you know? I mean, I was watching the movie Waking Life, which I bought during the pandemic because it's like helps me feel safe, you know. But like in that movie, they said that time isn't real and a lifetime is you constantly saying no to death, right? That you like every day wake up and say no until eventually you say yes, you know? So we're all still saying no, but it's more present than normal, you know? You know, we're in a fucked up situation. We don't have any real leadership going on right now. I mean, that's the thing when you're in a fucked situation, right? Is the reason it's fucked is because there's no leader, you know? Like I watched the movie Platoon to get a better handle on right now, because like a movie about us fighting a war that we're not supposed to be in with competing sergeants in charge of us is the state that we're in, you know? So it's fucked. And the thing is that like, I feel like I'm going to be okay with it. Like most days, like I've got everything together. I'm making a plan. I know what I'm going to do. And then things happen. Right. And that was the fucking national quarter shortage. Right. I don't know. Do you know about the national quarter shortage? So some reason when we shut down the economy, the flow of change got fucked up. Right. And all of the change ended up in everyone's house because people weren't buying things with cash and people weren't, all the Coinstars closed. Like people weren't going to Target to pay 10 cents or pay 10% to turn their change in, you know? So, so like I can't, and that was the same day that Dr. Phil, I found out, got a $7 million loan from the government, you know? And so like fucking no quarters on the day that Dr. Phil got a $7 million government loan just pushed me over the fucking edge, you know? Cause like I want to do laundry and I like posted to Facebook there's a national quarter shortage and everyone's like, oh, you can come to my house and do laundry. Okay, one, I can't because I don't want to like be in your COVID basement. And like two, you think this is like isn't a big deal, but now I have to pack up my fucking clothes and put them in my fucking car, you know? And like I don't have good, there's like no, you don't have fond memories of putting your clothes in your car, right? That's not something that you're like, oh God, remember that time when I didn't have laundry at where I lived and what a great apartment that was? No, you don't live there anymore because it fucking sucks. That's why people put washing machines in their basement, you know? And so the washing machine at my apartment complex hasn't run for like a week. Like it's a thing that's happening and nobody cares. And don't you have a fucking quarter machine? Like, can't you just like fire up the quarter machine and make some more quarters? Just make fucking extra quarters. Don't even, you know, you don't need to like make them apply to like Fort Knox and the gold standard. Just like send out some fucking quarters. So I need some laundry. So, you know, and those things, like, it's funny now, but like that day was just like a terrible day, you know, and these, that's just the state that we're in, you know, people call me, they've had a bad day, you know, like, it's just like a rotating scene of people, you know, so, oh, and then the other thing is, speaking of the quarters and, like, the flow of money, right, like, did you see Ozark, the show? Like, a lot of people have seen Ozark, so if you haven't seen Ozark, it's about money laundering, right? And it's about a family that decides to launder money. And it's really interesting because it's something that I hadn't thought about, you know, and just that like, that's like this essential part of crime that we never talk about. And so they go through this, like, how do you launder money breakdown, right? And basically you got to find yourself a bar, a strip club, a resort, a something that's got a lot of people and a lot of cash just flowing through it, just some kind of business with a lot of cash. Restaurants, perfect, you know? And then you just inflate how much money you're making that day, you know, inflate how much you spent on plates, inflate how much you spent on booze, and this is how you, like, wash the money, you know? And so I know that during this pandemic, like, what the fuck were the money launderers doing, you know? Suddenly all the businesses where cash just, like, flowed through it had, like, closed down. And in the show Ozark, there's like a scene where I don't want to give anything away. Basically, one of the characters says that during the financial crash of 2008, money laundering kept our entire economy afloat, right? It was all this cash from the drug dealers that made sure there was enough cash in the banks, right? So me, Dave Good, I was like, I should look up where that quote came from, you know? Who's the person that said in 2008 that money laundering kept our cash afloat? Oh, it was the UN director of drug enforcement, like the top drug enforcement guy at the UN is the person who said that. So this is like an unreasonable person, you know? So anyways, quarters aren't a fucking part of money laundering. You know, money laundering is all about the biggest possible bill, right? That's like one thing that I had heard about the black market for like a long time. The $100 bill was the most important unit of the black market because that was the most currency in the smallest form, right? So if you wanted to give someone $1 million, it was that. But then they switched. There's a 500 note euro now. And that because there's a 500 note euro, that's why the euro is more powerful than the dollar now. Or that's like a part of the equation. So, you know, I know the money launderers are excited for us to get back to work, you know, and they're not like super sensitive about our plight. You know, obviously keep doing what you're doing. I'm not trying to stand in your way, you know, but the one good thing about the state of things now that my friend Michelle said, who isn't here, is that what's nice about the coronavirus is you can tell when creepy dudes are coming at you, like, sooner, you know? Because there's this, like, 6-foot social distancing bubble. And so, like, when a creepy dude is, like, heading your way, like, now you have, like, a heads up, you know? And it's like really true, you know, because I mean, I deal with creepy dudes in different ways, but when someone like immediately starts closing that gap, you know that they've got boundary issues, you know, like on like a deeper level. And so, you know, so I'd been thinking about this. I also wanted to like revisit subjects in past podcasts that like are relevant. And it's like, sometimes I bring up like big subjects and then act like they're just going to like be done and they're not done. And I talked a lot about like Hollywood and, how women are treated in Hollywood. And was a big story, I don't know, maybe 3 weeks ago about Chris D'Elia. Chris D'Elia was accused of hitting on underage women via Instagram, right? And like, I'm like recording this, so I don't want to make any like outlandish statements, you know. He released some emails saying that like, when he found out people weren't 18 or whatever, he shut the situation down, you know. But regardless of if he was hitting on underage girls or not, like, he's trolling Instagram for dates, and that is going on in Hollywood just like all the time. Like, that's like what these guys are doing. So Chris D'Elia is like looking through all of his followers and looking for 19-year-old girls in the towns that he's going to go do comedy in, you know? And so there's this whole like blow up, you know, and there was also a story about Jeff Ross. I don't know if you saw any of the Jeff Ross stuff, but he's like the roast master guy. And he has this like Facebook accuser that says, she says he was his girlfriend for like 2 years from the ages of like 16 to 17 and a half, you know? And so this happened, and I'm like watching this happen on Twitter, and I'm like watching women comedians who I knew in LA like talk about this, and they're all just like furious, you know? Like, they're all furious from like talking about these stories. And so it's just like, you know, what's interesting about these stories, which I talked about in a previous podcast, like the age of consent in different states is shockingly low. Like, in Minnesota, it's 16, right? In New Mexico, it's fucking whatever, 16, blah, blah, blah. France, it was 14 to like 1965 or something like that. And then like, now it's 16, unless you're like not their teacher, and then it can be 14. It's like a really like fucked up scenario. And just that, like, I saw Chris D'Elia. That's like the first thing I did when I went to LA, is my high school friend took me to the Comedy Store and I saw Chris D'Elia, you know? Anyways, it's an ongoing thing. And the thing is that, so a lot of people don't know who Chris D'Elia is, but he's like perhaps the most powerful comedian in Los Angeles. You know, he's a Comedy Store headliner. So he has this like huge amount of all the comedians who come to LA, he has this like extremely large amount of power. And because headlining Comedy Store comedians have so much power, it's just like a magnet for total fucking douchebags. I don't know if douchebags is an okay word or not, but I don't know how else to explain these guys. But it's just like this toxic place, and the only way you'd want to like climb to that mountaintop is if you had some, if your primary concern was picking up 19-year-old girls on Instagram, you know? Like, we try to, like, diverge these two things, and they're not separate, you know? And so, you know, it was just heartbreaking to see women comedians who I, like, kind of know. They were, like, more famous and successful than me. I was just around them, maybe talk to them, talk to their friend, whatever. But these stories came out, and they're just losing their minds with fury, you know? And there are these articulate defenses of Chris D'Elia and Jeffrey Ross, like, happening and blah, blah, blah. They're nice. They mentored me, et cetera. But it's like, even if Jeffrey Ross's girlfriend wasn't criminally underage, and even if the women Chris D'Elia was hitting on weren't criminally underage, it's still a totally fucked up practice. And then, like, when you think about it, you're talking about scrolling through Instagram. This is dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of people, right? And now, you know, you're a famous comedian. You're talking to this woman on Twitter, Instagram, or whatever. They say to this woman, I think you're funny. I think you're talented. You know, I want to mentor you. You should come over for a drink. Like, that's how, like, the opening starts. And then, of course, it's a purely sexual situation, you know. You know, the women, they're not always going to say no. Sometimes they're going to say yes. Then they have this experience. Then they call this famous comedian back. Hey, can you help get me on stage? Can you look at my screenplay? Can you recommend an acting class for me? And they're like, fuck you, I don't know you, you know. They're on to the next thing. They might not say fuck you, I don't know you, but they ghost, you know. And so they create this, like, profound amount of carnage. You know, like, I just know a little bit about powerful people hitting on me and saying I'm talented, and, like, how confusing that is, you know, because then you're trying to do this really difficult thing. And, like, when, like, a famous gay man, for example, like, tells me I'm talented as a way of hitting on me, it's fucking confusing. And then they, you know, then the situation goes to shit, and then you don't know if you should quit or not, and if you're an idiot for believing in yourself. And it's a fucking profound amount of carnage that he has caused and these men cause, you know. And that's, there's just so much of that in Los Angeles. And, you know, so many women I met had had these experiences. Someone who, like, had, like, a 2-week affair with Lou Reed, and then, like, he said she was a great singer, and then now she's fucking homeless in Los Angeles, you know. Like, they just cause a huge amount of carnage. I know I keep saying that, but whatever. I'm a little drunk. There's a lot more. So, anyways, and it's just, like, unfortunate. It's just, like, all you got to do, comedy dude, is, like, find yourself a rad girlfriend, you know? Like, you're a super hotshot comedian. Or just, like, go to the bar and, like, pick up some random, you know, woman at the bar. That's fine, you know? Like, obviously, pick up whatever girl is, like, doing lemon drop shots that you want to pick up, you know? But just, like, in a situation where they're out, you're not, like, exchanging work, whatever. And so I had a long argument also with a comedy producer on the streets of L.A. about whether or not guys like Chris D'Elia were assholes or not, you know? And I just want to tell him I was totally right. That argument is, like, over. So you can't do that shit. And so I have been telling stories about my, like, relationship life. So I have one, like, pandemic girlfriend story to tell. And that was that I was grilling with my pandemic girlfriend, and this woman came, like, walking by, you know, and she, like, started staring at me while I was grilling. And at first I could tell that she was just, like, checking out the situation. Someone's grilling, it's a pandemic or whatever. But then, like, she started, like, checking me out, you know, and it was kind of like, come on. And then she knew my pandemic girlfriend and, like, waved. And my pandemic girlfriend said something, and she just goes, I'm just checking out the corn man, you know? And it's like, I was grilling corn, and, like, I know that you're, like, checking out, like, just, like, move along, you know? She's a nice lady, you know? But I could just tell that she had, like, gotten to that point. And then I talked to my pandemic girlfriend about it, and she was like, are you sure that she was hitting on you? Like, I didn't think she was, like, hitting on me. I just thought she was just, like, taking advantage of, like, watching me grill. And, like, how do you know? And I thought about this story when I worked at a movie theater in St. Louis, right? And we had that movie Chocolat, right? With, like, Johnny Depp. There's an audience. Did I tell you there's an audience? I feel like I did. Anyways, so the manager of my movie theater got this idea that I should, like, whoever is there should take this silver tray of chocolates and like hold out this tray of Hershey's Kisses for people to take from when they left Chocolat as like a nice touch, you know? And so they would like, whatever, push me out there. I'm like 23 years old and I like have a ponytail at this time. And like all these just like middle-aged women would just be like, aren't you sweet? Oh, and like grab the chocolate and undress me with their eyes, you know? And like, it was just this like nonstop, it would happen every single time. And I would come back to my coworkers and they'd be like, oh, Dave, you love that. Don't you just like love it when those middle-aged ladies are making like sexual entendre chocolate comments at you? And it's like, no, I didn't. I was like, this shit is fucking weird. You know, it's fucking weird. Everyone's like, you love it, Dave. You love the chocolate ladies. Oh my God, it's ridiculous. So anyways, that's the State of the Union, and that's sexual chocolate. And then the last thing I've been thinking about a lot is, well, it was like middle quarantine, right? Like I'm thinking a lot about the quarantine time, right? When things were intense and we were like all home and like shit was shut down and like the grocery store was out of eggs and stuff, like, you know. And the world was quiet, right? I mean, that was like this thing. I remember at some point, I don't know if you remember, like you could tell that suddenly the air was clearer and like the clouds were fluffier and stuff, you know? And so I'm doing what everybody's doing, which is like staring out my window. And there's a practice field across from my house. And this practice field had like a backstop, you know? And so one day of like big time action during super mega lockdown was watching workers like remove this backstop, right? And they did. And after they removed it, like at the base, there was this like pile of grass, like straw, because this is like the grass that's like grown up right around the poles of the backstop that like never got mowed, you know, is now like there in a pile. And I'm talking on the phone with my friend and like out of nowhere, this huge bald eagle comes like flying down, largest eagle I've ever seen, and like grabs this straw, this like perfect backstop straw. And it was like jarring. I was like, oh my God. You know, it was just like moving huge waves of energy with its wings, you know? And I saw this eagle and I was like, oh my God, it picked up this like mega straw. This is like the smartest eagle and the best straw, you know? And then I had this weird kind of negative reaction where I was like, oh, this is an eagle. And this is like a representative figure of like the United States of America. And like, I'm a liberal, so I'm not patriotic, you know? Like the so much patriotism had been put onto this eagle, and so much, I'd like absorbed so much like negative anti-patriotism about my own politics that I mean, I did enjoy the eagle a lot. I'm not saying I did not fully enjoy the eagle, but there was like this little part where I didn't, because of like aggressive political propaganda that made me feel like that eagle wasn't for me, you know? And so then I felt like bad for the eagle, because it's just like an eagle hanging out. It didn't like ask for any of this symbolism to be attached to it. And then I started thinking about freedom, you know? I started thinking about freedom. Like, it was such a crazy time. This is when, like, there were the, I call them the haircut protests. I don't know what, it was like the people who, the Liberate Minnesota protests, you know, where like armed men went to the Capitol, you know, armed men. And there's this like picture of like these three armed men that like circulated a whole bunch, right? And I feel like it's like a good representation of like any group. like one guy was like super proud to be there and definitely thought he was like taking on tyranny, and like another guy was just having a good time with his gun, and then the third guy had that look like, I feel like I shouldn't be doing this, you know, like maybe I shouldn't be on this state capitol grounds with like a giant gun, you know. And I mean, I just thought that's so interesting, right? Like here, the men with guns at the Capitol building are like standing up for freedom, you know, and just kind of like how absurd that is. So I saw a trans woman, right, with a huge beard and giant boobs and giant rollerblades and like a tie-dye outfit, like roller skating past me, right? And I was just like, why is like dudes in camel hats with guns freedom, and why is trans women on roller skates not freedom, you know? Like if you're asking me which person is like expressing more freedom in that moment, I would like lean one way, you know, to trans women on roller skates. And it occurred to me that like when people are talking about freedom, they're really just talking about like the freedom to be themselves, you know? Like it's like, oh, I feel free when I'm like in my boat, you know, fishing, you know, with my son, like that's when I feel free. Like that person's really saying like that's when I feel accepted, you know. And like I want people who come to the Dave Good Show to feel free, you know. I want people to feel like accepted. And the thing is, like, I don't feel free. Like if I went to a NASCAR event, right, I might not feel that free because I might not feel like I can be myself at a NASCAR event, right? Whereas you like brought someone from a NASCAR event to the opera, maybe they wouldn't feel that free. Also, maybe they would, because we stereotype the shit out of people. And I'm sure there are opera NASCAR fans on like both sides, you know? So then I thought I should start listening to philosophy podcasts about freedom, right? And I lasted like 12 minutes, you know? But this guy was like, freedom is a very promiscuous word, is what he said, you know? And so, like, if you get down to the root of freedom and, like, what is freedom, a philosopher is going to say there's no such thing as freedom, right? I mean, because, like, here in this yard, we're free, kind of, you know? But we can't, you know, build a rocket launcher and, like, start doing heroin, you know? We can't. That shit is illegal, you know? But the fact that we can't do that is like a restriction on our freedom, you know? I mean, some people feel free when they speed, you know? But the reality is we can't like drive as fast as we want to. I mean, all these things. Culture keeps us in a certain slot, how we are, you know? And then the other thing about freedom is like when your life doesn't have any shape, that creates like a huge amount of anxiety, you know? So like if you, like me or an out of work restaurant manager, like suddenly I don't have all these benchmarks to meet during the day. Now I got to create my own discipline. I got to volunteer for a project. I've got to like get my podcast going again. Cause if I don't have structure, I feel anxiety and I feel less free than if I do have structure. So really, like, freedom is a word where anyone who, like, uses it, they're selling something. It's an ideal word for sales, you know, because it doesn't mean a fucking thing. And so you just attach it to anything you want to attach it to, and that's freedom, you know? The same thing. I mean, patriotism is the same thing. Like, what's patriotic, you know? Like, thinking about the protest, the haircut protest versus, like, the Minneapolis uprising, you know, like which people are expressing freedom, you know, it's just like, it's like when you start to search through it and get to the root of it, it just kind of like disappears, you know? So you're in quarantine. So you've watched everything you can fucking watch, right? You watch everything on Netflix. You've watched every fucking thing, you know? And I'm like looking for new things to watch. So I found this show called The Show About the Show, right? And like, I'm so like into myself. I mean, let me tell you, like, I listened to my last podcast like 10 days into being alone, and like listening to myself recorded after being alone that long was like a moment where I could have lost sanity, you know, like it was too much. But the show about the show is this guy, he makes a show, and every show is about the making of the previous show. So he like makes a show, and then he does a show about how he made that show, and he does a show about how he made that show, you know? And he records as much of his life as he can, because he's never going to know when he needs what he's talking about now to be in the show that's about the previous show. And if he doesn't, he can't do that, he does like a reenactment, right? So I like watch two episodes of the show about the show, and I'm like, Kaveh Zahidi is like my hero. He is my saint, you know? He is like this guy. I find out that he's like recorded his entire life. He has another show, another movie I can't remember, but it's just like him talking, and I get like super into it, right? And then I'm like, wait, I know this guy from somewhere, right? And I know him because he's in the movie Waking Life, right? And like, I watched that today. I watched that like Deep Quarantine. And when he's in Waking Life, you know, he talks about many things. Then he's saying that film, that recording something is like about God, right? That like, we use film and video to tell stories, but that's not the purpose of film and video. The purpose of film and video is to capture God as God is happening and view it, you know? And I'm watching this and I'm like, fuck. And our dreams were free, right? That is where we are free. We're free when we are asleep. Because when you dream, you are free from consequences, you know? When you are in a dream, like, that's freedom, you know? So we do get freedom at night when we go to sleep, but we don't have it during the day, right? And so I watch this, now I'm watching the show about the show, and now I'm even, like, more into the show about the show. And what does Kaveh Zahidi do? He starts sleeping with, like, a young woman who's working on a show. And then the show, like, spirals out of control and becomes fucking stupid, you know? So he is not my hero, but like, really, I think as like an artist, that's all I have to do is just like make a good show and then like not fuck my interns, and then like everything will work out as it should, you know? So, okay. All right, well, let's call it a show.
Been listening to The Dave Goods Show.